Welcome to Mentoring Moments. Mentoring Moments is a sub-series of the E-Commerce Edge podcast. It is composed of clips taken from Jason's one-to-one and group mentorship sessions. Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the podcast. I am super stoked to welcome Paul Jarrett from Bulu to the podcast. Welcome, Paul.
What's up, Jason? How are you doing, man?
I am stoked to have you along for the ride today, my friend. I think we've been trying to tee this up for a little while. I think it's been about a month, but trying to find time in each other's calendar was a bit of a mission. So I'm glad we finally were able to make it happen.
Now we can give everybody a ride, so they better buckle up now.
Exactly. And I love what you guys do or what you profess to do. In all transparency, I've never worked with Bulu before. At least if I read what's on the tin, then I'm pretty excited about having this discussion, because I think that when it comes to e-commerce, when it comes to omnichannel commerce, I believe that logistics is one of the sexiest part of the entire industry. I believe that actually e-commerce is basically just a customer-facing interface on logistics anyway. That's ultimately what it is. And so logistics will make or break your business. But before we get into what you do, how the heck did you even get in? What drew you into this space? Because you've been doing it for a while now. You've been running Bulu for 12 years and now. But what sucked you into this logistics / e-com space?
Yeah. First of all, I feel we could conclude. Well, that was a podcast episode. You summarized it. I say many times, most e-commerce brands do not realize they're a logistics company. And they probably do what we do, which is hide from it for the first couple of years till it becomes a problem. So I would say that, ironically enough, or maybe cliche enough, we are finally solving the problem that we encountered 12 years ago as a consumer goods e-commerce subscription box. And we just always thought it was around the corner. It was coming, and almost begrudgingly, after we crushed two fulfillment companies or 3PLs, that's, you know, so much jargon in this industry. It's all smoke and mirrors. We finally just decided we got to solve it for ourselves. We solved it for big brands. And now what we're doing is really we've acquired the company 100% from venture capitalists, and we are taking it to the market for most brands of all sizes to use. And it's been really interesting, but I'd say that it was not a path that we were like, yeah, let's do logistics. We have sold, the team that we have here has actually sold the software company, right, in our spare time. And there's a lot of people that you probably wouldn't expect at a warehouse, at a logistics center, that don't really have the background. But I also clearly by now, after 12 years, that is the advantage. We never looked at things the way that the 100-year-old plus industry looked at it. Yeah, it just didn't exist. And finally, we did it. And that thing really is helping brands ship like a major retail brand, right? Whether it is subscription, whether it's gifting, whether it's physical retail or e-commerce, and not just trying to take your money off the margin that we make off the shipping label, like everybody does in this industry, but by working with our partners to actually figure out a model that works so they can build the scale, right? And we just say, look, our goal and our partners' goals are more shipping labels that we can both agree on, whether it's direct to the consumer or a customer, or whether it's to retail shelves or through TikTok or whatever. As long as we keep that as the focus and we make sure that we work the margin, not to try to hustle people or them hustle us, but we build out a model and we're transparent, that's what everybody should be looking for if they are a scaling brand, right? Because our, honestly, like Bulu Box, a subscription box that we did, had we saved $2 more, our story would have been totally different. And now I look back on it and I'm like, man, we could have saved $4 in logistics and supply chain. But you got to get into the thick of it to see how things actually work. So yeah, it's been an interesting journey, but we netted out in a spot that we're all super excited about, excited enough to buy the company and to kind of level.
And you like to say that you do the tricky ship. So what does that mean to you as a brand, as a company, as an ethos? Yeah. What does we do the tricky ship mean? Does it mean you do the really hard shit?
Yeah, I'd say number one, we didn't want to sound like everybody else in the 3PL industry. Trusted, like whatever the three words, trusted, long-term experience, like we just didn't want to sound like everybody else. So that was the first thing. The second thing was what we do by shipping direct to consumer, business to business, through social media channels, individual items, kitting, bundled items, promotional items, We cut up a volleyball floor, put it in memorabilia and ship that, like we did that light manufacturing. It really is some like tricky shit. And so it's a joke. I think it all started off that ship my pants years ago. And one of our clients just started saying, oh, just, they would tell their partners, just call Bulu. They handle all this, that tricky shit ship. And nobody ever really knew what they were saying. So it just stuck. And I found that those are always the best taglines where they just, nobody's really quite sure where it came from. Nobody's sure why it stuck. It's just got an essence about it. And I think as far as the brand and the culture, like we are very much not like a fulfillment company attitude, structure, all of that stuff. We really do try to pull off some interesting things. Like today is National Flapjack Day. And for that, we made a bunch of pancakes. Long Table Pancakes is one of our brands. And we made those, and just as a joke, we were handing them to everybody. So they're just literally getting like a pancake and like standing there and eating it. Like just that playful whimsy, because warehouses can really suck, right? Like it's hard work, right? But who said hard work can't be fun and whimsical, right? So yeah, that's just, we believe that if you're gonna do the hard things, if you're gonna do the tricky things, like you need to make it fun. And frankly, that's just the essence of the leadership team, right? Nobody takes themselves too serious.
And do you see yourselves as a technology company, a client services business, a 3PL, a logistics company? How do you, if you were to put yourselves in a box, and I know, pardon the pun, put yourself in a box, where do you guys see yourself sitting within the stack for merchants? Obviously, you were scratching an itch, and that's how Bulu came to be. But if you were to try to contextualize yourself, do you think it's your tech that makes you stand out? Do you think it's the services layer that you offer? Do you think it's automation? What is it about you guys that you would say this is our secret sauce?
Yeah, I would say that we fight with that daily, right? Everybody wants to put us in, it's a 3PL. And we're like, technically, we're a 5PL at 3PL rates. And then people say, whoa, you guys are like, it's like a tech company with physical whatever. And we said, we're using all third-party software, because although we have built software and we've sold it, we're wise enough now to understand, let the software people do the software thing. We have really good partnerships with software companies. So we're not just going to get something off the shelf. We're going to meet up and we're going to get things that other people won't get. But I would say if you were to categorize us, I would say what we're doing right now, or what we're trying to figure out how to let people know, we are disrupting logistics, right? And what's some good examples of that? We actually, next door, we have a co-packer for baked goods. They do like mixes and stuff like that. We developed a partnership with them. So how is Long Table or some of those brands getting and saving a couple of bucks per shipment? We established that partnership with manufacturers, and we just literally bring it over 50 feet and we're able to get a better deal. The other thing, the thing that a lot of brands are like, we've landed, I think, like 30 new clients in 60 days, which is unheard of for logistics without spending hundreds of millions of dollars in advertising. We've really found a novel way to ship one or two items to retail companies or through TikTok. So if a brand is selling e-commerce and then they want to sell on other people's websites, we can fulfill those. If they want to sell through social media, we can fulfill those. But also they can just pick up the phone to small independent retailers or big box retailers, and we meet the compliance for everything. But here's the big catch. Those companies can just order like one blueberry and two lemon of the product. It doesn't have to be a case. It doesn't have to be a pallet. And we're shocked to learn how that doesn't really exist. And so a lot of our partners, what they're doing right now, and this is that thing where we see TikTok blowing up, right? And that's awesome, but that's a wave, right? It's gonna die down over time, just like Apple and Facebook policy, and way back in the day was Google Ads. I'm dating myself, right? But what will always, for the foreseen future, stay true, get a brand presence on physical retail shelves. People will look at your product differently if you're crushing it on e-commerce and you just got a couple of stores where, frankly, you can just take photos of your product next to other brands. And to sell a subscription or to do a promotional item and do the TikTok thing is amazing. And we can fulfill all those things. But to then take it a step further, and when you do get that call from Target or you do get that call from wherever, there's nothing that you have to do. You just have to fill out the paperwork and say, okay, Bulu will take it from here. And that onesie, twosie shipping to bricks and mortar on top of e-commerce fulfillment, on top of social media fulfillment, it just, we're embarrassed because we didn't even spot it. It was pointed out to us by a few clients because we didn't know why everybody was clamoring to work with us. And the thing I like the most is you can go to LinkedIn. I repost a lot of our clients' things and they're like, literally saying, thanks to Bulu, we did this TikTok promotion. We also added 3 independent, 1 store for bricks and mortar retail. And yeah, it's like I said, you rack your brain forever. And it's almost like that moment where you go, hey, look, we've done our own consumer goods product. We built and sold the software. I don't know if you're familiar with rangeme.com.
No.
So rangeme.com, it's like for buyers and sellers of products.
So it's like a marketplace?
Yeah, it's for mostly for bricks and mortar retail buyers to find stuff. So we built and sold that. It became the back end of RangeMe. And then we were doing this turnkey subscription box thing. I got Disney boxes and all sorts of stuff. But really what I say is thanks to those big brands for 8 years that we were pulling off a subscription in a Disney theme park, which was unheard of. All of those experiences added up. And then we just stripped everything away and we went, oh my gosh, any consumer good that we work with can just tell us or, you know, copy and paste the API or just do it on themselves on their dashboard. And now it's fascinating watching how quickly they're growing. Yeah, it's a good time. And it's only a matter of time before a lot of people figure out what we're doing. But I think we got about 2 years before the market really keys in on what we're up to. And as far as connecting with other warehouses, it's not a problem. We already did it. A lot of fulfillment companies are like, saying ship fill in the blank. We're the Uber for blah, blah, blah. Well, what do you do when you get a bad Uber driver and they got your product? And yeah, it's just a really great time and 12 years of experience and doing a lot of different things to like ratchet it back and do something simple and truly help brands grow. We always say, if you're looking to save a penny on shipping or fulfillment, or that's going to be the decision, actually don't call us because the reality is we'll probably save you more than most other people. But our mentality is growth, right? And who thought to grow in the last place anybody would look, which is logistics, but it also makes sense. Marketing, everybody's trying to do better CAC, better like whatever. And it's almost as if supply chain and logistics were just left to their own devices. And we feel like we're one of the first few companies that's going, now wait a second here. There's probably $2 to $4 that most brands shipping 1,000 or more a month can save, and they just don't know how to look for it. And let's break down that wall and let's not make logistics and supply chain scary because we remember that. Let's have an open door policy. Let's do podcast tours with the warehouse behind us, right? Let's just be open and transparent about it because that was the thing that we never found. And we never found people that were willing to ship if we were doing less than 1,000 a month or whatever. So yeah, it's just like all of the things that most entrepreneurs or growth-minded people expect to happen in logistics and fulfillment. And then they go, what the hell? I got to get 3 different companies to pull this off. You don't have to do that anymore. And it's a fun spot to be in right now.
And how many facilities do you guys own across the US? How many warehousing facilities do you guys own? And then secondarily, on the backside of that, most 3PLs will pigeonhole themselves intentionally and they'll say, hey, look, we're great for D2C brands. We're great for retail brands. We're great for B2B because they have different needs. Usually they have different needs, those different types of ends of the market. And obviously if you're a D2C brand, it's usually you're shipping 1 or 2 items door to door. If you're doing B2B e-commerce, then maybe you're shipping cartons, pallets, and containers. That's usually quite a different skill set, even from a receipting perspective and from a devanning perspective and from a decartoning perspective. And from, it's usually quite a different skill set and different infrastructure that you need to be able to service B2B brands versus B2C, D2C brands. And so first of all, what is the scale of your infrastructure? And 2, where do you guys think you're the best fit?
Yeah. So I'd say number one, we don't own any other warehouses, right? We don't want to. So our main facility is 120,000 square feet. Part of the reason I do this here is because I want people to see like the work is happening. What you can't see on the other side or on this side is the structure of, I'll give one of the secrets that we do. One side is literally built out, structured for kitting. And what's something that we do differently versus every other kitting focused 3PL? We will rearrange. Maybe it's not necessarily rails or tables or whatever. Maybe we need to make pods. People think that's crazy. We will move racking around, right? How do you do 2.5 million shipments for GNC of 60 different variations of kits? You get off the stopwatch and you keep doing it. It's fun. We're using ChatGPT a little bit right now, but you have to restructure. And truly, I think our best kind of flow coordinator for packing and fulfillment is a former user interface designer from Pixar, because they understand when they're making kids games, it was like less clicks, less movement. When you look at a warehouse, it's less footsteps. How do I get the bathrooms closer? It's the same thing, awkwardly enough. And I would say that when it comes to warehouses, we rent, we have 120,000 square feet. Another thing that we do is we don't have the best two-day shipping rates, but we have incredible three-day rates, and we had 95% of the US being in Lincoln, Nebraska in 3 days or less. And so as long as we get that order out the same day it comes in, it's really comparable to 2 days. And when people see the savings, they're like, yeah, screw it, our customers can wait 12 more hours or whatever. And then as far as like the second thing is like, how are you doing what you're doing? Here's the easiest way to explain, and I'm going to bastardize it, but I think logistics and the era of, well, receiving, shipping, here's what I've learned reading a lot of textbooks over the years. Language and words are very dangerous in an industry that needs to be specific. I have no problem with the best logistics people that get their, you know, PhDs or whatever it is in it. I'll just stop them in a room and go, what do you mean by receiving? And they'll chuckle, and I'm like, okay, chuckle. Tell me in your own words what you actually mean, because I guarantee you this room full of people, everybody has their own definition. Like, is put away part of receiving or not? Because context really matters. And frankly, I think it's a bit of a trick that fulfillment companies use to confuse people and make them feel dumb. And I feel like we're just some of the first people where it almost feels like we're still learning language at times. And you just got to look at people and go, nobody says bill of lading anymore. Just stop it. Like, you're starting to sound like an idiot. But I would say that the simplest way that we look at it is most companies, I got my product here, like a water bottle from one of our clients, maybe one of our clients, I don't even know. Most logistics and fulfillment is set up in an archaic manner that the whole point is, how do I get the physical product from point A to point B in the most efficient, cheap way possible, right? We have never looked at it like that. We, since day one, this is funny, side note, we get people all the time that call us and ask us like, hey, can we pay you a ton of money to take us off of paper? And I'm like, what do you mean take you off of paper? Oh, our warehouse still uses paper. I'm like, oh, yeah, you're toast. We have always looked at it. There is a physical version of your product and there is a digital version. And the most important thing is you keep those two things tied together, because then all of a sudden you're not looking at how do I get this physical product in a manner to this physical location and whatever. You're literally saying, what is the most efficient way technology wise to get this from point A to point B? And addresses just become addresses. It doesn't matter if they're a retail location or whatever. And as far as the actual work itself, I think it really does boil down to experience, like 12 years of how do we do D2C and B2C? We didn't know any better for 8 years. Nobody told us. Like Disney, see Crayola. I remember, I think it's Crayola. They were touring our facilities, right? Our American Express, one of them. And they said, oh, you're doing the B2B work here. Are you in between like fulfillment companies? And I was like, oh yeah. And they're like, you're going to subcontract that. And I was like, yeah, we're looking into it. And I remember they left and I ran to my desk and I was like, oh my God, you guys. Most fulfillment companies don't do B2B and D2C.
Yeah.
Like, and we just didn't know any better. And after 8 years of it, like when all your systems and processes are set up that way, the same reason we had to call up software companies and yell at them and tell them to build us out stuff and whatever it was. It's also the same reason a lot of those companies succeeded. I see a recharge because we were doing things different and we were unlocking potential that maybe the developers didn't know because they weren't on the floor. But having built software, we were able to tell them like, hey, nobody's going to use this because when you get to the floor and the people using it, they don't know what these words mean. This is all confusing. You need to make it this way. Do a WYSIWYG editor, copy paste stuff. I think sometimes the softwares and the technician people, they actually think the industry is that complicated. And their way of dealing with it is using big words and big language. And the consulting I do for some of the logistics software, 99% of the time, I'm just going, just dumb it down. Just say, put away. Why do you have to say relocate, allocate sources, blah, 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 blah. Just say, put it away there. And everybody's shocked by that. But I'm like, how would it be if it were a social media app? Because the level of user for your interface can't be any more complicated than the most complicated social media at the time. And how does social media do all the things they do with a brilliant user interface? Stop thinking like an Excel document and start thinking about the end user the way that everybody else is. Because let me tell you, like the end user in a warehouse, it is like the normal American person, right? And they don't want to sit through tutorials. And I think just all of those little things added up. And we looked up one day and we were catching a lot more orders from people. And hats off to like Paracana and BuyOptimizers, because they were really the ones that told us what they were doing with our system. And we're like, oh, whoa, yeah, we need to just stop saying nothing and really help our partners and the world know you don't need different fulfillment centers. You don't need to pay a huge fee. What you need to do is get the inventory in and make sure that everything matches up perfect. Because if you get inventory off one, it's a house of cards. And so how did we solve for that? We got lines down there. And if anything moves over the line, it pains me to say this, but if anything moves over that bay line before it's in the system, you just get fired. We tried everything, right? And let me tell you, as soon as we circled up 250 people and we said, hey, if you haven't verified that this is in the system and it doesn't have a tag on it and it moves or touches this yellow line, I am so sorry, but we will have to let you go because it is that important. Inventory is that important. And I think that's the ugly little gremlin that most fulfillment companies don't want people to know, is they actually don't know what the inventory is because they're moving too fast in a paper world and they're not documenting it properly.
And how has IoT impacted what you guys do? Is digital, we've obviously traditionally had barcoding, we've traditionally had pick to light, there's a whole lot of technology that has infiltrated the logistics industry over the last decade, for example. But it feels like IoT and digital twin technology is the first time that we've had a legitimate ground up transformation of, in when I say ground up transformation, to the point where you wouldn't potentially need to have a human making sure that it doesn't pass the line, because when it passes a certain line, all of the scanning from the IoT dots, for example, happen automatically, and it makes sure that as it passes a certain line, all of that gets scanned from one location into another location. And there's technology out there now that can make that happen virtually automatically. There's still some human components involved in that, but it feels like we're getting closer to a time and a place where technology can automate a warehouse substantially. And even from put away technology, even carousel technology, robotics, we've seen obviously all the automated warehouses that Amazon has and everything else. And so rushing headlong, it feels like, into a place where we're going to need a quarter of the people in a warehouse that we used to need versus what there was 2, 3, 5, 10 years ago. How have you seen technology disrupt? Hey team, I have a big favor to ask you. Please pause this episode and send the link of this episode to someone you know that you think would enjoy this content. Really appreciate you spreading the word. This is how we grow. We're not a Joe Rogan. We don't have big, massive advertising budgets, but we absolutely want to grow. We want to get the learnings from all of these episodes out to as wide of an audience as possible, and we need your help to do it. Thank you, and now back to your listening.
I would say we are like the first people to jump on. I remember getting Manus probably 3 or 4 years ago, maybe longer. We got like our robotic automated arm and we literally found something online. We contacted this company in China. I think it's called Elephant Robotics maybe. And they had a scaled down version for modeling and taking to trade shows. And we're like, can we just get that version, not that giant car version? And it was great. And it just, it's this thing where even I'm thinking of all the things that we've got before. We've got floor cleaners, drone scanning barcodes. We actually, hopefully, knock on wood, within the next 6 months, we're going to have a humanoid guinea pig robot walking around trying to do stuff. Hopefully, it doesn't kill us. And here's the problem that I see. This industry, I used to think exactly what you're thinking, and I'm not so sure anymore because the attitude, let's call out, is if you call the fulfillment company, why are you really calling them? What do you want? You want cheap prices, right? You want the lowest shipping rate. That's how people think of it. If you're cutting pennies and your expectation, even people that ship on Amazon, the margins, like it's hard to make money on Amazon unless you do it correctly. It's easy to like mess it up and lose that dollar or whatever. Here's what we see happening. Number one is massive apprehension by the people on the floor. And what's going to happen there? Those robots are going to get Mount Newport on them. And that sounds silly, but I'm telling you, they will, like, people that feel like their livelihood is at stake, they will figure out ways to not let those things happen. So that's going to happen for a while. We're going to figure out a way to get over it. Then what's the next thing that you're going to need? There's probably a massive investment up front, but the part that we turned away and said we got to wait for the industry to get there is the technical abilities and the skill set to maintain those things and keep them going really is when you can find those people. So we're in Nebraska. There's actually a robotics school here. Those people are going to Microsoft and they're going to big companies. Nobody is graduating with one, a robotics degree. Very few are, right? Two, are they really going to go work at a warehouse and maintain equipment? I think that as much as it feels around the corner, it's around the corner for Tesla, for Amazon, for very big companies that have hundreds of millions of dollars to put into it. And I think we still got another like solid 5 years before we really start to see it. And I'm sure there's people listening, they'll go, oh, like my fulfillment company or this or that, or no, this guy doesn't understand or like whatever. I'm like, no, let me tell you, I looked at my Rolodex. I do a lot of the speaking in the industry, right? For fulfillment logistics. I think I had 3,900 different 3PLs in my CRM, right? Checking out some of their websites and whatever. When you see the light pick to light, if I really wanted that in my fulfillment company, I would get on a plane and go watch it for a couple of days. Because the odds are, it probably isn't working exactly how you think that it is. Same with robotics, same with everything else. So I think the things that we'll see first, well, I will tell you one thing that just out of nowhere had a significant impact on us. And I know that there's all sorts of opinions on it, but we took a separate account and we made sure it was secure and we connected ChatGPT to a few databases of ours. And whether it was the packing style or the speed or whatever, there was a lot of hallucinations by it, but it did kick out things that we had never thought about doing. Adding a piece of cardboard somewhere, just like looking at it from a different perspective. And then also when it comes down to shipping rates or leases or even legal, right? Or even certifications or can we ship alcohol? Can we? It's a really complicated old world. And to just be able to talk it through with Chet, that's been something that's wild. And actually, one of our software companies that does inventory, they just came to us and said, look, we want to do an AI chatbot so your team can just like talk. And I was like, say no more, we're in. And so I think that's where we're going to see it. The physical nature of things, if it doesn't exist in a warehouse, it's going to be hard. But you got things like cameras, right? Like why not clock? I think we have a little automation where we just have an old Nest Cam set up where people can show their face and clock in that way if they don't want to punch in a code. That's where I see almost innovation through software used in other industries used here. But there's not a lot of people with those tech chops. But as far as physical hardware, there's just got to be some companies that really pay enough and do enough to honestly then companies like us at Bulu, like we'll take their two-year-old stuff. You know what I mean? But yeah, it's as much as it feels right around the corner, the thing that people, I see it all the time with software companies, robotics companies, and it's annoying because they all think they're like the cock of the walk, right? The cock of the walk. And you just look at these things and you're like, man, not a lot of warehouses have that sort of power source. There was somebody that we were working with and they actually, we were really interested in having meals for our team that were affordable, right? And everything matched up, but then we found out they needed different plugins. They needed those big 220 like refrigerator. And you're like,
that one. Three-phase power.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And you're just, it's those little things that is just unbelievable. And even when I talk to someone, I'm like, hey, when's the last time you were at a warehouse? A lot of them have never been. And a lot of the softwares that people are using, they're literally calling us before they launch. We're like the stop point for the MIT students or the whoever. And I'm just almost pleading with them, please come here, because humans do not act like software. You don't put the input in and they just do what they say. They got to go to the bathroom. They got to do this. They got to do that. You're going to say things for within the software that annoys people. And they're just going to throw it across the room because that is a lot of the people that work in a warehouse. They just want to do it, get it done and get out of there. I tell people, a lot of people go, what are you doing? How are you doing it? Like, we don't get it. And I tell people, I grew up in a trailer park in Nebraska, dirt poor. I've worked in it. Like, I get it, right? Like, I understand the dear God, I hope I don't get fired mentality. And that's what most people in this industry are. And
sure.
Because they move it over a yellow line, they got to go. I also have been fortunate to work in New York City in advertising, San Francisco, started the company, raised capital when we were in San Francisco. And I also understand that like white collar growth mentality and to understand both, and I say it respectfully, blue collar, white collar, and to be able to translate that back and forth, that to me, a lot of times is the magic that nobody's willing to put in that work or understand that. And when you create a software fulfillment program that's Uber for shipping, you bet your ass you're going to have people, Bubba from Alabama or Paul from Nebraska, saying, yeah, we're certified. Yeah, we're this or that. And we saw that a mile away and we're like, ooh, let them work through that kink. Do they really think people are going to be honest with that? Are they really going to do the FDA? Are they going to answer a form properly? And that was a lot of hiccup with all those kind of like pandemic 4PLs that popped up, right? They're all licking their wounds after that. But it just, yeah, it really drives me nuts that people are not building software and actually looking at the end user, right? Like, it's just wild to me. And also, the end user isn't going to tell you, right? Like, they're worried if they tell you what's wrong with it, like they're in trouble. Like, how do you actually figure out how to make logistics software? You got to show up. You got to show up and you have to pay attention and you have to ask the questions correctly, right? And sometimes I feel like that's the only thing that we've done different is we let people online raise their hand and we go over to them and they say, if we did it this way, and we go, man, we don't know, let's try it. And our best ideas, our most efficient things have come from random people on the line that maybe they were just here a day, but that unique perspective and they look at everything very differently. And you're like, I don't know, let's do what Bobby's asking over here. Let's put the rollers up higher, shut off the power to it. He's right. We got to pack 2.4 million of these. The power's going to be running. But if we just tilt it up and unplug it, it's actually a better cadence, better speed. It's not hot. It doesn't cost money. Damn, Bobby doesn't give that guy a bonus. And that's where the magic happens, right? It's literally watching somebody use your product that I feel like all these companies are missing the boat on. I'm pretty passionate about it because it's just so obvious to me. But I could have a million people listen to this podcast and I guarantee you, not one person developing any sort of robotic is going to call me up or another fulfillment company up and go, hey, let me bring this down here and see if it works, right? Like, I dare you to do that because they know in reality, they don't know how to talk to the people, right? They don't know how to not be scared when 6'5", 300-pound dudes are there talking to him. And that just that rough language and that attitude. And yeah, I'm still waiting for that day. And hopefully it isn't another 12 years. And I'm like, all right, I guess we got to do robotics now, right? Uh-huh. Like the same way that we had to pick up and do this sort of fulfillment. But yeah, it's pretty wild. It takes a different breed to connect that white collar and blue collar. And I think that really is the essence of what we're doing.
I've been on many unlike I think a lot of my peers in the industry, I've been on plenty of warehouse floors with my clients and seen operations, end-to-end operations, walk through their warehouse, seeing how they do light manufacturing, seeing how they do pick, pack, dispatch. I've watched them go through from a completely manually organized warehouse where it's done by category or brand or some other human understandable structure on their pallet racking to move from that. I was working for a health brand in New Zealand, and we went from that to chaotic put away, and that saved us that whole put away based on instead of something that's human understandable, but moving to something that's machine understandable instead. And the machine knows where there's gaps. The machine knows where it's most efficient to put something away. The machine knows, okay, I've got a carton that's this big. Well, I've got a space over here, a gap over here that's this big. Cool. We're going to put that over there, regardless of whether it's the same brand as the thing next to it or the same type of item as the thing next to it. And there is technology, I think, now, especially from the WMS perspective, yes, that has gotten a significant amount better over the years to where owned warehouses now can make a whole lot more sense. The technology's not that expensive anymore, or a combination of owned warehouses, 3PLs, dropship. There's multimodal logistics now that feels like it's within reach of most brands as they scale. And they might start out with a small little warehouse of their own, and then they might say, look, if we want to scale, we either have to move into a much bigger warehouse of our own, or maybe we keep this for a certain part of our catalog and we outsource the rest to a 3PL, 4PL. And let's talk, just for the benefit of my audience, I have a pretty good grasp on this, but not everybody in the audience will. If we try to differentiate the services that your typical 3PL, 4PL and 5PL provides, why don't you tell me what your take on that is? Because I think there's a lot of misunderstanding out there of the types of services that logistics partners can provide. And even when it comes down to reverse logistics, not every logistics partner can handle reverse logistics. And what does that mean? And so let's just talk through, just as we're getting closer to the end of our time together, but I want to help the audience start to understand some of the terminology, because it's a whole different language, as you said, bill of lading, FOB, all these different terminologies and all the different terminology of pick, pack, segmentation. And there's so much to do with this whole logistics game. And I think even for the smaller end of town, in terms of some of these pure play and omnichannel retailers, they do themselves a disservice when they don't at least understand what it takes to get the goods from them to their customer. And they push that off and they say, I've got so many other things to worry about in my business. I've got the marketing to worry about. I've got procurement and figuring out what products I'm going to carry. I've got branding to worry about. I've got customer service to worry about. I've got technology and building my website. I've got all these things to worry about and think about. And logistics oftentimes is the last thing that they worry about. Yeah. And actually, you really need to actually think about that from my perspective. And I learned this when I had my own e-commerce pure play. Yeah. We had to actually think about logistics first before we did anything else. And so if you don't at least understand the basics of the industry, you are opening yourself up to get screwed, the way I see it. So let's talk through some of those core service provisions that a partner, a logistics partner, can provide for you.
Yep. I'm like super geeked out because I'm like, oh my God, you get it. Yeah, I definitely encourage your listeners to really tune in, because even what you just said, I'm like, whoa, shit. Nobody gets that fast that far. I'll preface it with, I feel like this is one of those situations where I could say anything and get the data to back it through a textbook or a Google link, or you can support your BS, right? And we've done all that work. How do we like really break it down and honestly have a conversation with somebody that is, oh shit, we're selling 11 million just on TikTok. What do we do now? The way that we look at it is, you have your source or your raw materials, right? So that's step one. Two, call it manufacturing, call it importing, call it like, it's the part where you got to turn the materials into something, right? After you create something with it, now you're going to have to store it. Then you're going to have to pack it. Then you're going to have to ship it, right? And then you're going to have to distribute the shipping to the correct locations. And so probably the easiest way that we talk about it is when I understand 3PL is third-party logistics, right? But the way that we think about it is if there are, we'll say, a lot of people say there's 8 steps in the supply chain. I would argue that there's 5, but you could make up whatever you want at this point. So let's just go with, for sake of the conversation, or what we share with our clients, we say 3PL, let's say that means store, pack, ship, right? That's the 3 and the 3PL. The storage rate, what you want to do is you want to find out what they're paying for rent, and you want to be fair and mark it up 10% or whatever, right? Now packing, which is the labor, you want to see, like, we're in Nebraska, so storage and packing are really low around here. So
because you got enough space, you're not in the middle of New York City.
Exactly. There's a reason we are here and we're staying here when we launch in San Francisco. And so what are the labor rates there? What's the retention rates? It doesn't necessarily mean who's paying the lowest. It probably is a combination of what fulfillment company pays fair and has really good retention, because there is a serious expense, not just with training, but HR. That's the problem.
Onboarding, hiring, firing.
Or people do crazy stuff because you're just getting the lowest paid worker and they don't understand if they do something wild, that's going to really mess up the whole thing. And then shipping, we'll just call that like the shipping rates. Yes, there's materials. Yes, there's all that stuff. But store, pack, ship, what I have seen is, and I would love your feedback on this because I'm always just trying to go, does that sound right? But what I would say is for a shelf-stable consumer good that's not going to expire, whatever you retail that at, you're probably going to look at 10%, maybe 15% is going to go to that store, pack, ship, right? If you have a good that's going to expire and or it's a little bit tricky, right? Now you're maybe looking at like 15 to 20%, right? And so that's like where if you sell something for 10 bucks, right, your dollar or two is going to go to store, pack, ship. And I think that is one of the things I want to do here, and maybe you guys can do it, but I want to create content where it has individual items, like a visual, and it really maps out what percentage of your stuff should be going where, because the amount of people that come to us and they're paying 27% for storage, packing, and shipping blended, you're like, oh, that's the problem. We can get you down to 15. And if our goal is more labels with yours, we're just taking your marketing dollars to sell more. That's not good for any of us. Why does that happen? Because the sales reps are like hustling, trying to make their money. So what do? We don't have sales reps that make commission. We have account managers that get a finished proposal and they pester somebody to be closed and they keep their jobs that way, right? Like it's a very software style sales strategy. But if we say store, pack, ship is the 3PL and that's the middle of the supply chain, like how do you get the 4? A lot of people like extensive.com they're or ShipBob, they're saying the 4 is the distribution channels, right? Can we integrate with Target? Can we integrate with eBay? Can we integrate with Shopify, TikTok, et cetera? Sure, you might be able to get some copy and paste APIs and that's great, but each one of those has a very specific way that they're going to want you to like bag and tag it and pack it. That's where we come in. That's why we say like hybrid hub and spoke fulfillment is the technical thing we're doing. So that's the 4, right? So we have store, pack, ship. Bulu makes our money. We basically try to save about 10% markup on all of those. If you ship more, we're going to let you know and we want to give you that money back. Congratulations. You hit volume. Your price didn't go up, right? The 4th one that we offer is not just 150 plus integrations that are already made or you can build an API. We're also offering, we'll do it for Amazon because we know how it needs to be done. We'll do it for Target because you have to be EDI compliant, which is just their rules. There's no EDI compliance, right?
And yeah.
The 5 come in, well, simply by tying the shipments and the storage and the inventory to the manufacturing and raw materials, all of a sudden you're getting alerts or you're pinging your vendors or raw materials that says, hey, today's National Flapjack Day. Long Table Pancake is selling a boatload of pancakes, probably at 9 a.m. I didn't know because I didn't see it, but I'm sure the co-packer next door got a bunch of email alerts that's like contact long table probably got alerts that's, hey, you guys need to do another purchase of your inventory or volume. And that's what I see. So much of logistics is a reactionary attitude.
And yeah.
How do you actually get lower shipping rates? And this is, I've gotten fights on stage with, not physical, but arguments on stage about this. What we see is there's really only two ways to get lower shipping rates. Well, three. People would say higher volume, but that doesn't always happen. How do you get lower rates? It is the sales rep's commission. You need to know what they're making, and it needs to be fair for all parties involved. How do you do that? You need to get face-to-face with them. Every month, we bring in all of our reps. We also use like eHub, Flexport, we ship station, we shop all those rates. We just take the best one. That's all it is. The second and the biggest thing is whoever your firm is, and it's a big reason why we do a lot of subscription. Subscription helps you project the future, predict the future.
Yeah.
If you can start to tell these FedEx, UPS, et cetera, how many trucks you'll need and when you will need them, that is actually the way to get lower rates. And what
one less trip out to your warehouse every day, but it brings their costs down. Therefore, they can extend to you better rates. And if you have predictable growth, then they have predictable growth.
Exactly, man. Exactly. Yeah. So store pack ship and then adding on those extra things with, we call it sales channel distribution or distribution. And then just by simply connecting with things before the storage, like manufacturing and raw materials, and alerting those people, of, hey, we're running low, better start harvesting the corn or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. Right? That's been just like a game changer, right? And none of those things are, some of them are automated, but we always say like rules with variables. Like you are going to need more product, but build out the automation so it says, we need more of this. Do you agree? Right? Does this actually verify it? And yeah, it's just such a, it's funny because it almost starts to look like a marketing automation,
like workflow,
right? Like you want more of this, you put more in here. And I think that's another like thing that we just look at things as customer acquisition cost to lifetime value. How does that not apply to a physical good? We're still waiting for an answer for that. So yeah.
Love it. Wow. What an insightful conversation, Paul. It's exciting. I think logistics is incredibly cool. I think logistics is super important. I think that a lot of brands, they think, look, if we do FBA, then we can just send up everything to Amazon directly from our manufacturing plant directly to Amazon, put it in their warehouses. They'll distribute it around the country where they think it needs to go. And that's great. And maybe if the bulk of their sales are happening on Amazon, then maybe that makes sense. Sure. Okay. Maybe that makes sense. But for everyone else who, for maybe Amazon is just one channel of four or five, then if we want to start bringing in Amazon-like experience to our B2B e-commerce brands and our D2C and B2C e-commerce brands, the reality is you have to pay as much attention, or at least close to as much attention, to your logistics as Amazon does theirs. That's the reality. And the only reason Amazon is really fucking good at logistics is because they care and because they've made it a priority. And that's why. And they've poured massive amounts of energy, time, money, infrastructure. They have built the warehouses. They've bought the trucks. They've got the drivers. They've got the pick pack dispatchers. They have poured so much effort into this and technology into this that it's a specialty. It's one of their capabilities that sets them apart in the world. And I think that on a smaller scale, on a microcosm of that, the best brands that are the most successful, that are the most profitable, that are the most sustainable, they will put a significant amount of time and energy into their logistics. And it's not a one-off. We need to pay attention to this forever. As long as we're going to be in business, we got to pay attention to this. And we got to revisit this every month, every week, every quarter, every half year. We got to look at this. We got to look at supplier performance. We got to look at pick, pack, dispatch performance. We got to look at delivery performance. We got to look at what types of offerings we give our customers in terms of shipping methods and types and service levels. I think historically, brands were always saying that they would cover all return costs. And I now see a shift in the industry where they're saying, hey, we're going to at least charge you a nominal fee for returns. Maybe it's not going to cover 100% of our costs, but if we can bring down return rates and minimize people bracket buying off of us because it's no longer free to do returns, then that makes us more sustainable as a business. It's better for the planet. It's better for everybody, right? It's less hassle for us. It's less cost for us. We can actually reduce the cost of the goods that we sell because we now don't assume that 50% of it's going to be returned anymore. Yep. So I think there's I think that a lot of retail brands in particular, they get super myopic about marketing, and that's like where all their time and their energy and their love and their brand building and the pixel perfect design on the website and the customer experience and the in-store experience and everything else. And I think all those things are important. Don't get me wrong.
Yep.
But if you don't have a rock solid operational core of your business, and if we look at rock solid operational core being a three-legged stool, for example, well, logistics is one freaking big leg. Yeah. And the reality is, if you don't have a rock solid operational core that you are continually optimizing, you will have a competitor that does. And they might beat you in marketing, but they also might just beat you in logistics. And if they beat you in logistics, it doesn't really matter how you lose, whether you lose on marketing or you lose on logistics, either way, it's an L. And either one of those things can put you out of business. So my takeaway from this is that if brands can approach the logistics element of their business with the same care, concern, and passion that you look at logistics, if they can do that, then they will minimize the chance that a competitor that does logistics better than them will put them out of business. And that, to me, is the key takeaway here.
You warm my heart, man. It's very rare that you run into anybody that has that level of insight. And I appreciate that. It is rare. And I think you absolutely nailed it. And it only makes sense that after all of those marketing and everything tactics have been done and people are still just like hyper-focused on it with AI, like it's like the ancient logistics thing is getting completely ignored. People think it isn't, but I'm telling you it is. And I always look back at my co-founder and I's experience, and we were the people in New York City, in San Francisco, working on innovation and branding and whatever. And how did we get into consumer goods? We got so frustrated that our ideas from brainstorming never really fully saw fruition because it couldn't get delivered. Like the marketing teams or like whatever, it was always bastardized by the time it got done. So I think almost in a weird way, all we're doing is helping people and entrepreneurs and people that want to grow. We're just helping them get the product into their customers' hands the way that they envisioned it. And we just give a damn and we understand how important that is. But thank you. I appreciate you saying that because it is rare to have somebody understand it and help break it down. So that's really cool, man. You got a new follower. You got a new listener for sure.
Oh, love it. Absolutely love it. Now, Paul, as we come down to the end of our time together, this is where I get to flip the script. I get to turn the microphone over to my guest. I get to let them ask me one question, any question they like. It could be personal or professional. So Paul Jarrett from Bulu, what is your question for me today?
Are you wearing pants?
I'm wearing shorts.
So no, you're not wearing
pants. I'm not wearing pants. No, I try to wear pants as infrequently as possible. That's one of the reasons I moved to Mexico. And that's one of the reasons why I moved to Puebla in Mexico, because it's got weather like San Diego. I can live in shorts and flip-flops pretty much year round here in Puebla. And that's how I like to live most of the time. Unless I've got to be on stage and speaking somewhere, then occasionally I'll put pants on. But I'd like to say that 95% of the time I'm in shorts and flip-flops.
I tried to get you to break and you wouldn't. So now I got to ask you the real question. Do we have time for
it? Okay. What's the real question?
What is the one book that you've read in regard to business or e-commerce where no matter what, you go, man, I'm referencing that thing, or just it's the one that you just always keep going to time and time again?
There's two. E-Myth Revisited.
That was my first guess.
I love that. I tell you, that book was transformational to me as a young entrepreneur when I had my pure play. It really, I tell you, when I finished reading that book, I walked into the office. I had one business partner in my business and I said, I am going to write an operations manual for our business.
Yeah.
So that if something happens to me and I die tomorrow and I get hit by a bus, this business won't die. Yep. And I'm literally going to document from the moment I step through the door in the morning to the moment I leave at the end of the day, every single operational thing that I do and exactly step-by-step how I do it with screenshots and photographs, et cetera. And I tell you, the other takeaway from that book was build a business as if you're going to sell it, even if you never do. It's you have to build from day one with the idea, at some point, I'm going to build this business and I'm going to sell it. And therefore, I have to be able to extract myself out of the business as soon as possible. If this business is just me and it's all in my head of how this business operates and runs, then I'm actually just an employee of one. It's not a business. It's all it is. I'm an employee. I'm just the only employee of this company. Yep. And you'll always be shackled by it. You'll always be leashed to it. And those two things hit home to me because there were really practical things I could do to make a difference in my business. And they were just so tangible and so hands-on that it made a massive difference to me. The other one is Atlas Shrugged. And Atlas Shrugged, I just think that Ayn Rand just had a view of the world that she knew exactly where the world was going. Yeah. And she wanted to fight against creeping Marxism. And the only way she knew how to do that was to tell a story and paint a picture of the future that I think none of us want, and saying, if you don't want the world to get there, then you better figure out who John Galt is. Otherwise, that's where we're all going to end up. Yep. And so those two books, I've read a lot of business books. I've read a lot of, I deal a lot in mindset, heart set, gratitude. I think mindset is super critical in business. I think empathy is super critical in business. I think there's a lot of things in business that have to come together for you to be good at what you do. And I don't think you can learn those quickly. I think they take time. And especially for me, I'm a super high energy guy. I'm super demanding of myself, but I'm also super demanding of everybody around me as a result. And sometimes that comes across as a little unrelenting and a little bit unforgiving. And now that I'm 49 years old, I turned 50 this year, I've chilled out a little bit, and the empathy aspect of my personality, I think I've really cultured that a lot over the last few years. It's been intentional that I've done that. Am I perfect? No, but I think I've achieved a level of balance in my life now that I didn't always have. And so now it's adventures over things, it's lifestyle. There's so many things that you have to work through as a human being before you actually work out what are the really most important parts of life, and everything else you can let go. But it takes time to work that out. It takes a few hard knocks to knock the BS off of you and to smooth those sharp edges.
Right?
Sorry?
That ego is a son of a bitch, and they'll creep up on you before you know it, right?
It just is. And you can think that you don't have one, but I tell you, living in other countries and in other places to where I was born and raised has been the game changer for me. Born and raised in Southern California, moved to New Zealand, lived there almost 30 years, now lived in Mexico for over a year. I tell you, moving halfway around the world knocks a lot of bullshit out of you. It really does.
Travel is, I really hope my kids don't go to college and they just travel, because
great education.
You will learn more that way. So something is telling me to share this with you. Do you mind if I give this?
Please do.
I'll go ahead and tell the story because it's a little funny. I was at a Shop Talk, and Shop Talk the event.
Oh, of course. Yeah.
Yeah. And I've always just been on the outskirts of that. Not really, I don't know, just a little bit like, they do this different thing and whatever. And I get invited by a buddy to go to a party. And I know right away, I'm like, there's going to be VCs and the shitty little half zips. And there's going to be a bunch of startups there. And fuck it, I don't want to go. And my buddy's like, come on, you gotta go. And I'm like, fine. He's like, they'll love you. I'm like, I don't know, man, I'm a different breed. So I go to this thing, and the only reason I went to it is because they said it was going to be in a trailer park. And I'm like, which it's a mobile home park. Trailer park is a negative.
Is a different thing. Yeah.
Just for the record. But I'm like, this will be cool. Like, I want to go there. It turns out it was Tony Hsieh's Zappos in Las Vegas. He has this But he had this Airstreams, tiny houses. So we go to this thing, and there's bonfires, there's tortoises, there's llamas. And I'm like, where the hell are we? Middle of Vegas, big block. And immediately there's the group of VCs, and everybody's like, how much capital did you raise? And I'm like,
what a bad measure of success.
How much money did you con out of somebody? Which we've raised 5 million, but I'm just saying, I don't think a lot of things need as much money as they do to get started. So there's these two groups, and I'm just sitting there and I'm watching, and they're all kind of being jerks to the staff. And I just get uncomfortable, and I just beeline it towards one of the tiny houses. And I was like, hey, I'm just going to duck out in here. I'm like, I don't want to talk to those people anymore. I've been talking to them all week and I want to like, you guys need help doing the dishes. You want to make, I feel more comfortable bartending than like I do at some of those events. And so I'm doing my thing and hanging out and they're looking at me, but I just got my black hat and whatever on. And this dude comes up to me and I know all about Tony Hsieh, big fan of his work. And it did have a big impact in us, but this dude comes up to me and he looks up at me and he goes, "Hey man, thanks for your help tonight. I really appreciate it." And I notice I'm standing in the corner and a lot of times I look like a bouncer. I'm like 6'5", like all black or whatever. And I look at Tony and I didn't know it was him, but I figured it might be because everybody got quiet and he had a big mohawk at the time. And I said, "Tony, not all white people look the same, man. I'm not a bouncer." And he looked at me and I was like, "Oh no, did that?" And he just busted out laughing and we're both just like laughing our asses off. He's like, "I totally profiled you." I was like, "I know, dude, I got a ball, whatever." So we
went okay
out that whole night. And that night we ended up, I'll say we smoked cigars and went to his Airstream. And it was me, him, and another guy. And the other guy left and it was just me and Tony just sitting there for hours. And I just looked at him. I was like, "Man," I was like, "what's," and I didn't do the thing. "Here's my card. Here's whatever." It took him a year to find out who I was and get back a hold of me because I just didn't want to be that dude. And so I was like, "Man, what like knowledge after everything you've done, what's the thing that you could wish you could just download into people's heads?" And he goes, he pauses and he looks at me. And I remember I stopped him. I'm like, "This isn't, I'm stoned. Really ethereal, like out there thing. Like I want some like concrete stuff." And he goes, "No, I understand." And he goes, "This whole thing, this whole life, this business, call it whatever you want to call it. It's about one thing and everybody's missing it." I was like, "Yeah." And he goes, "It's just about experiences." I go, "Experiences." And I'm like, "Tell me more." And he goes, "Every interaction you have, whether it's opening a car door, whether it's waking up, every single thing you do, you actually get to choose what the experience is going to be." And he goes, I just really believe if people thought through that and they were more intentional on creating, it's not just customer service, but in everything you do, he goes, so many of the world's problems would be not. And I'll tell you what, man, the older I get, and the more I think about what he said, I was like, "Oof, it was profound."
The more it makes sense. You're like, yeah. That's deep.
Yeah. So hopefully somebody listening or you or whatever, pull something from that. But man, it's one of those things out of everything I've done, I'm like, that just reigns more and more true. And that Tony was a badass. He was something special and different. Yeah. That dude wasn't supposed to be here for too long anyway. And I mean that in a good way. It sucks.
Nah, he was a meteor that just showered the earth and then he was out again. He's, "I'm out." Yep. But no, that's so true. And I appreciate you sharing the story with me. And I appreciate you sharing your experience with me. You're one of a kind too. And look, I think if we have the right attitude and we're trying to give back to the industry and we're trying to ultimately help people at the end of the day, I'm such a strong believer in a rising tide floats all boats. That's what I'm trying to do with my work and my podcast and everything else. It's my love letter back to the industry. And the industry's been very good to me. So I'm super grateful as a result. So listen, Paul, I've thoroughly enjoyed our conversation and I can't wait to do it again soon.
If you'd like to get mentored by Jason for free, head over to greenwoodconsulting.net, scroll to the bottom of the page and click Get Mentored by Jason.